29th, 1998, Hank DeHaven interview.
So I kind of went along with it. I'll kind of see a while. They'll probably wise up to me. I don't understand it, and they'll get rid of me. But meanwhile, I'll pick up a few paychecks and go back to Idaho or something. But he left, and then right after, he was with me about, while I was on days, and then I went on that D shift, and as soon as I popped up, I reported on D shift, I was by myself. And I was it for the whole damn health, all the health monitoring and everything else. But he showed me what the instrument did. And I had a chief operator in operations kind of showed me what to look for. We had an outage right off.
Okay, so the job entailed one instrument with one dial on it?
Yeah. Well,
it wasn't 52 dials. It was basically one dial.
Yeah, basically it was the same Cutie Pie CP you've probably seen that they have right now.
Same
only
idea.
It was more crude. It had a lot of problems like drifting down scale when you turn it on, and you'd have to re-zero all the time. And
okay.
Then we had lots of other instruments like Zudos and things like all that. Most of the stuff was been some big instruments. Maybe George mentioned the Beckman. And
yeah, you
weighed about 35 pounds.
That was what they first used.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
We still had those out there, and we used them as just. They had a wooden case, which was poor material to have on radiation zones.
Right. Do you know what CP stood for?
The nickname was Cutie Pie.
What about CP?
I should know, too, because I turned in a report on that one time.
You just called them a CP. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if it rings a bell, let me know.
Yeah.
And when would you use a Beckman instead of a CP?
Well, there'd be jobs like where you had to set up a background. You wanted something just sitting over here to do background readings, you know, where you could sort of leave something unattended, you know, you didn't have to keep.
Okay.
As a health instrument type.
Do they have the same sensitivity, the same scale?
Well, the Super Sense has the same. It was more sensitive, actually, than a CP.
Okay.
But all these instruments had different ranges, you know, like two or three. CP had three ranges.
Right.
X1, X10.
And you had to remember which range you were in?
You'd glance and see what range you're on, yeah. Yeah, because it would change it by a. If you was on the wrong range, on a higher range, then you could get. Yeah, there's been cases where things got screwed up. You know?
Was the highest range pretty darn high?
Well, the full scale on a CP was 5 R per hour.
Not milli R, but
no,
R.
R, yeah.
And
our lowest range full scale on a CP was 50 MR. So the middle range would be 500 MR full scale.
Oh, say that again, the middle range then?
It would be 500 MR per hour full scale.
And that's all per hour. Yeah.
And then I said 5 R. That's 5,000 MR per hour.
Right.
Yeah.
What was a day's dosage allowed?
50 at the start.
50
MR a day was a, and then it increased to 300. A day or 300 a week, or three, the same, you could take it one day, or you couldn't, if you took 300 that day, you couldn't go
okay.
back in.
What about when it was 50? How did they do it then?
50 a day. Yeah, just 50 a day. So you could get higher. I don't really recall.
So if it was 300 a day, they said if you got nothing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday,
and you
Thursday and Friday, you could use up that 300.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
But with the 50 a day, they weren't really thinking along those lines yet.
No.
Okay. That's interesting.
As I recall, they might have, but I wasn't made aware of it.
And that 50 a day, you're saying when you started, that's what it was?
Yeah. That was in 1950. They did some changes. Things started getting, when they increased the power, they had to have, I guess they did some more studies or something, because we was working out there in operations, and the ones that determined what we could take maximum health-wise was what would be now Battelle.
Right.
Group.
Right. They're the ones that developed the badges and things like
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first badges was when it was a great big old badge about this long. Maybe you've seen them.
Uh-uh.
They had a picture, and it was metal with silver backing on it, and about tear your pocket off. And you had these, you had two pencils you wore that had no reading. They just discharged as a regulation. You got that, Lois?
I can't
do it. Come on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you know what it wasn't film?
No, we wore a film badge. A
and
film.
What did the pencil do?
And
did
the
it,
pencil
did
was it? It was all it was sensitive to was gamma radiation.
Oh. And how did they read it? What was it that
they had a, it was kind of neat. They had the badge houses that they had what they called the pencil girls. They'd hired these whole crews of girls to read those pencils. They worked just swing shift, the girls did.
Okay.
They did all the pencils, showed up. And you got your pencils every day when you come through the main gate. Pencils in your badge, it stayed out in the area when you come in the gate.
So when you left,
you had a clearance of folded, cue clearance with your picture on it, government.
Okay.
Clearance that everybody just carried in their hip pocket. And then you had to present that to the patrolman, and he'd look at you and match it all up, and he'd pick your... we must have had some numbers on those. They'd just reach over in this rack and get your thing and hand it to you. Yeah, I think it was. You'd pay.
Which gate would they do that at?
At the very front gate at the area, on the outer area. They'd clear around the whole area. There was one exclusionary fence, and that's where this main gate was. And after you got in the area, there was maintenance shops and administrative buildings and the power buildings and all that. But to get over into the reactor, you had to go through this final exclusion area gatehouse.
That was called the exclusion area?
Yeah.
The other one was just the area gatehouse?
Yeah.
Okay.
And at that point, you had to show your I guess you didn't have to show your, you just show your badge, I guess. That's
But you
had a cartridge. They did look you up, though. They matched you again. They had you recall these Cardex files? They kind of lay, and they lift
through.
Them up, flip through, and you got tabs. There must have been payroll numbers on the edge of this.
But you already had your badge and pencil coming
and
in the area.
But there was another, that was the final check to get in.
So the pencils measured only gamma radiation, but it wasn't a film or something.
No, they had film badges on this picture.
How do you think they read the pencil?
They had these pencil readers. They had them. They still got them. They're still reading pencils. The pencils they have out in the area now, you can look up there and you see a little dial with a 0 to 500, I believe it is, on 500 MR. As you pick up gamma radiation, it discharges and that little needle goes up. And then they've got the high range too that goes to high. Run, read tracks, and it was never very satisfactory.
Yeah.
But we used to use the, we could read the, and I've done an awful lot of working around neutron radiation. We used to measure it and then establish, somebody was getting a factor, used 10 more than whatever the CP read, say, or whatever the neutron limit was that you'd read.
And
unfortunately, the neutron radiation, you'd tell them and they'd burn the guy would, that plus his gamma radiation would be to determine how long they could work in a radiation zone. Your beta radiation, unless it was given off, he'd given some figure a factor of 5 roughly. He had other factors. 5, you could take 5 times as much you might. Say you're something read it, 125, you you just allow 25 of that, say it was five, you know what I mean?
Okay.
One fifth of that for your.
So if the pencils were only sensitive to gamma, what was the film?
That was probably the one of the main things. The film was reading gamma and beta.
I don't know. That's, they had a shield on it.
Yeah,
right? And that would block.
That block
gamma,
off the
or the.
That block off. It block off the beta. Would read the beta and block
okay.
out, and the gamma would go through.
Yeah.
So that's
okay. Because the beta was not as high energy.
No,
as gamma.
No. And alpha was terrible. They had a lot of problems. We didn't have any problems with alpha in the 100 areas. You might see. I mean, you'd almost could see you didn't have it, but you did, but you really didn't.
So they didn't, did they care whether you were getting beta or gamma, or did they just look at the total dose you've gotten?
Well, as a health physicist or as a HI inspector, you had to care, you know, making the determination of how long they could work there. You calculated in, you take a reading,
mm-hmm.
Window closed was your gamma. You'd open the window on your CP, there's a little shield window, and then the CP would go up higher. And so you'd read the difference of what the window open, window's closed, and you had a little graph on the side of your instrument that was calibrated. And from that, you determine what the beta dose rate the guy was receiving.
How did you know it was beta?
Well, you could tell it would.
Or did you
open the window and then it would go higher?
But you broke it down to.
Yeah, and so say the window closed, it read 10. You went to open, it went read 15. So the difference in was 5, and you'd read on your graph 5 up and over, and that was how much the exposure to beta radiation was.
And even
that make any sense?
Yeah, if they were also being exposed to gamma, though, you just converted it to.
Well, yeah, just you'd take that 5. It wouldn't just be 5, they would get 15, say, which the thing dials in. You take that 5 and read this off the graph, and it might say 100 on the graph for this 5. Because it was generally a straight line, here's a graph, and it's just a straight line going up.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd read this side would be your dial reading, and this would be your factors that are going this way, and you'd 5 over, down, you know, and that would be
okay.
See, and so you'd give them the say 5 difference, and you had 10 to 5, and that was say that 5 turns into 25. So you'd say that okay, your reading is 35 milliramp mixed radiation.
Mixed,
yeah. And then neutrons was say it was you could have neutrons too, so you have maybe another 10 background of neutrons that you previously measured or had to take a different instrument and measure.
Because your CP wouldn't measure.
No, I wouldn't even know it. No.
Because neutrons aren't ionizing.
They are ionizing.
They are ionizing.
Yeah.
But aren't
the beta's ionizing? And gamma's ionizing.
Okay.
Those three are real ionizing
okay.
radiations. That so you. Get the whole total is referred to in milliramp. Oh, back in the old days, that was called. They had it break down a little different. They call it millirep. Have you heard that?
Yeah. But
then they
was it a different calibration?
Well, it was a different. Yeah, they used it. They had a conference in Geneva that made this change and it affected everything. Everything you had written up in your survey,
you had to convert them all.
Had to convert.
Yeah.
So everything you had in Millerep, you could interpret it back like to this from this convention.
Okay. And the Millerem is just a way of
a mix of straight gamma by itself is referred to in MR. Right, sir.
In the what?
Yeah, MR. Millerem.
Oh, right.
Millerunken, I mean. And then betas. And then you add your beta in there, you got milliramp. And then you add the neutrons in, you still got milliramp. They used to do it in that, at that one time they had Miller Rank and MR, and if you got beta, you had Miller Rep, that would be your gamma and beta. And then if you got neutrons, you had Miller Rem. So if you had all three of them, you had your total thing added together would be Miller Rem.
And that was the number, it was a convenient way to say, you've got all sorts of exposures happening in here, but we can narrow it all down to one number.
Yeah.
Okay.
To get finally, what you're interested in is what the total amount of penetrating radiation the guy's getting.
Okay. That's actually, I wasn't sure how that worked, so that's good. And,
let's see.
Wait, I mean, you were.
Well, you know, another thing you had to worry about in the old areas was gas, reactor gas.
Helium? That was or carbon dioxide?
No, it was. What was a gas you had?
Radon?
Well, radon is another kind of gas, right.
Was it a radioactive gas?
Radioactive gas from the. The reactor was. They had this blanket of gas on the reactor to...
The one that circulated through?
Yeah.
Well, that was like helium and carbon dioxide.
If you got oxygen mixed in the reactor, like, say, a startup, you open things up until it got purged out, it would come out as a gas, and it was highly radioactive. You'd see it on your CPs, and it was... it was kind of a bad deal. You had to go right straight to fresh air a lot of times in that case, but we did have a limit on the lower level so you could get into the gas instrument rooms where the instrument men had to work a lot of times to get things going in.
So sometimes you would go and start to take
we made a determination that 25 millirad gas, you'd just give them a flat dose rate for that. But if it went over 25 millirads, you stopped right there and you went into fresh air. No assault mask. You got out or went to fresh air.
Because you were inhaling it, it was much more serious.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So you would sometimes walk into an area, read it, turn around, and walk the heck out.
Yeah, your instrument went up, down. Well, you could tell gas, it would sit there and kind of pulsate. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like a steady, solid reading.
Weren't you kind of like the canary in the mine, though? I mean, you were the first guy to go in.
First guy in, last guy out, right? Okay. That's right. You're right.
But you must have gotten pretty good at reading your dial then, keeping an eye on it.
In fact, you know, we got so good at those gamma pencils, we'd know how much we had on it. I'd know how much I had on my gamma pencil before I ever read it or even went up to the girls or anything. Later years, they got rid of the pencil deal at the gatehouse, these pencil girls and the HI and the radiation monitors. From then on, Alec read all the pencils.
So you're saying at the end of the day, you had a pretty good idea of
it was just a feeling. Like you drive your car and you maybe don't even look at the speedometer, you know you're going 50 miles an hour pretty much.
Yeah. And what kind of reading, at the pencil would measure in millirems?
Just gamma radiation.
In millirems?
Yeah. And that's really, in the long run, that depended on how much you worked during the year, or that's dependent on how they staffed the job.
Did you use the same pencil every day? Or did you get a fresh one?
Fresh one, yeah.
So you always started
fresh?
Yeah,
they'd just go, it'd be nondescript. I'd take pencil 245 maybe today, and somebody else would have it the next shift. It went back in and got reread and reread, unless there was something went wrong with it. They did have a deal to recheck them every once in a while. They were supposed to.
Did they zero it out? Or
yeah, we'd have to zero it out.
Okay.
And then you zero it. You take the reading, record that reading, and then you take and push down. It was actually a little charger, and it puts a charge on it. And then you have to, adjust it. You got a little knob there, and you adjust it to read zero in your eyeball, and you know down through a little you're looking at this thing.
Yeah.
But now on the other ones, you had, the ones that didn't have that, they was really a little easier because you had a big screen you could look at.
Oh, okay. So at the end of the day, you could guess that your pencil had had X millirads?
Yeah. Generally, you MR on it because it just read MR.
Millirems?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you pretty well know. I've got 50.
Okay, what about those days you got a surprise? That must have happened.
Well, yeah, that happened. Yeah. There'd be...
Did you ever have to, like, knock off for the rest of the month because you
get caught like that. We was constantly rubbing up against as the years kept getting worse and worse. As the years went by, we was constantly working against our 300, you know, getting more and more exposure. We went through one period where we had to rotate all the 200 area radiation monitors to the 100 areas, and they had to, through, and it was like going to a new world because you didn't, the location.
Yeah.
It might be you was reading still radiation, but it was,
you wouldn't know,
different surprises.
And you wouldn't know where to expect it.
No,
right.
That's right.
Yeah. So did that 300 stay all through your career?
Yeah.
They tried to.
There was a big long strike in 1965 just to maintain the three REM a year, 3,000, you know, a year. They wanted to run it up to five.
So it was 300 a month, millirems.
300 a week. Or
millirems.
Yeah, 300 a week, 300 millirem a week, or up to 3,000, or you could take 2,000 and a quarter the way that's set up, kind of weird. You could take this in a day. You could take the most you could take without permission. Upper management permission was 300 a week or 300 at a time or a day. Because you could, it wasn't uncommon to be in zones where you'd be having to do some fairly routine work at a dose rate of 300 MR. You know, where you could burn out in less than an hour or less than 15, 20 minutes.
Okay. Huh. I was just looking back to see where I put that about the weekly versus daily. Where did I put that?
We had a kind of a bad deal out there. We had to operations, and you're always the one, the killjoy. They're wanting to, on operations, and we're the thorn in their side as a health physicists group.
Yep.
So they wanted to determine you wanted to work you just as long as they could get by with it. You know, that's all. Production.
I mean, Greg mentioned the same thing. And it happens if you're a safety inspector, whatever you're doing.
Yeah, right.
In a restaurant, if you're the health inspector, you're creating the same kind of problems,
creating a problem.
Except in a restaurant, you're not protecting the workers, you're protecting the diners more. But in your job, the main people you're protecting are the workers.
Your fellow workers there.
So how did they,
chronically, they... Just a run of the mill. You had to keep your sense of humor because they always thought we had the best job, you know, or the rackets and all that kind of stuff, you know. Because you physically, you was using instruments. You weren't valving something off or sweeping the floor or something like that.
But did the workers, were they glad to have you around?
They always
want you there first?
Oh, yeah. They always had their favorite ones that would some guys would stop the job quickly and some guys were understanding enough to try and keep it going or have some input on how to do it so they won't take so much.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of our job, really. I always took it as being part of the job my gosh, you'd get so you knew as much as the pipe fitter did because you'd
see it before.
You'd see it so much.
Yeah.
Some guys in the 200 areas got into some, they got, and that would have been not from external radiation, it was from internal, you know, taking a burp or something from something like a glove box rupturing or something, where they were pretty well out for the rest of their time. There was guys involved in some incidents where they couldn't work for the next year or two. You know, kept them out the whole rest of the... Might have happened the first early in the year and couldn't go back in.
Okay.
I just can't remember to put a finger on when, and I was there all the time, too.
Okay, let me ask you about the...
We did have some hairy things happen, like slugs falling out on the elevator, on the C elevator on at Enter, you know, with guys in there.
When you were charging?
Yeah, they was up there to charge, and got the wrong cap off, and it back coming out the easy way, and they had the elevator was between landings. And
yeah,
making a flying leap. Was wondering if the guys didn't get their necks broke.
Okay, so what they did was they took off tube number one in the front.
Yep.
But undid tube number six
and
in the back.
Back. Yeah.
And then they went and started to push them through?
No, they just, if you take off, if you don't have the back one open first.
Oh, there's pressure in there?
High pressure. And they'll just come out the, right out the front.
Because I wondered how they always managed to get each door right. And
well,
I
you know, we had a deal. It was kind of playing with a tiger's tail at sea area. There was always this problem of high readings around pigtails and caps on the rear nozzles and the reactors there, because all the crud would come right down to the cap on the nozzle, and this branch off the pigtail for the water was just a little bit ahead of it. So what they decided to do at sea area was put these long inserts on the end of the caps that went up to where this pigtail come off of the nozzle, and it had an O-ring. So you, on the old areas, when you loosen the cap, the water start gushing. It had some notches on it that you unclicked, and to take the cap off. But you could loosen it. It was kind of a big Allen type wrench thing in the middle. And though you see too much water come out, you know you wasn't valved down, and you had time to save yourself. But sea area, when you loosen the cap, this wasn't that way, because they had that long insert and that O-ring, and the water wasn't coming back down there. So you didn't know it till you unclicked. And there was been a time where you're on the wrong header or something, and here comes the spacers out, and you try and make a run for it. Well, one of the guys, they just super, well, I was back there one time and they did that, and I just super, energy, whatever you call it, kicks in, your adrenaline and he pushed that back in and clicked it shut. Some of the spacers landed on the elevator, but we got out safely, but it was chances that it was doing what they call quickie.
Yes, I've heard the term.
Yeah, and they quit. They didn't quit at that time. They quit finally in K area after there was a big
quit. What? Trying to do a quickie?
Yeah, that was finally taken care of. It was almost got some people killed, so they quit doing it.
What year was that? Any idea?
When the quickie stopped would have to been it was at K West in
57 or 58
along there.
Okay.
At K West. Yeah, when they had a sort of a meltdown. They was down for weeks, and it was run by committees. All the upper management would meet in the lunchroom every morning and decide that, and they had a checkoff thing to do any job. You had to go through a checkoff, did we do this, did we do that, and all these steps, and it slowed things right down to almost a crawl till they got out of that thing. But in that same time frame, they did Those were no more quickies. They decided that was one chance they was.
Which meant that whenever they shut down, it was going to be for what was it?
Right. Yeah. You couldn't just go down and back. Because they could do a quickie and just be right back going and just down for. You didn't have to wait for this reactor, what they call turnaround, and get going.
Yeah. When they were recharging, putting new fuel in, the rear face was not a safe place to be, was it?
Not.
You weren't in there.
No.
So how did they unloosen the cap?
They'd communicate with the front elevator. But they decide that you valve down to lower the water pressure to these caps once you're going to discharge from the front.
And just did a few of them.
You'd only do so much. You could only do, say, a couple, three rows or whatever.
Oh, whole rows?
Yeah.
When
you did valve down, your whole row was covered. But in that coverage, you might only do two or three tubes on that row. This is all predetermined by the
the center is always the hottest.
Yeah, and they'd be more quicker, shorter running time. Now, clear on the outside, heck, it might sit there for years.
Okay.
The fuel clear on the out. And I, in fact, I've always wondered about that. When they finally shut them down, that some of that old fuel must have been in there for.
Yeah.
It never mattered much. You never touched it. But they would once in a while in the old areas. It ruptured because they had aluminum tubes.
Yeah. So they would shut down two or three rows, but they might only be refueling two or three tubes in a row.
In that row, yeah.
And
then they'd maybe do, maybe three or four rows at a time, or, valve down three or four rows to make a setup maybe of, maybe up to 40 tubes or something.
Okay.
In the old areas, they only had 2,000 tubes in a whole reactor.
Right.
And then the area had something like 4,000, I think, or something like that.
Could, when the reactor's running, was it safe to do the
reactor
interface?
Had 1,000. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay.
Big tubes.
Oh, they were bigger.
Yeah.
Okay. In order to open the valves in the back, the process tubes, you couldn't go back there for the reactor was running?
No. It had to be down.
And once it was down, they turned off the water.
To
a couple of rows.
Yeah. Valved it down, and there's still water always going through it, a small amount.
Would guys go back there and get on the elevator?
Get back there and get on the elevator, and then take off the, tell them they're back there, and they say row number 10, valve down. Okay, and then the communications was the control room would tell you to take off, or they'd have a list of how many tubes with them. And uncap, and they had one of the little things they called pigtail, or
just a special tool.
Well, it sit on there to it sit on there to let the water go out and it'd let the tip off.
Tip off.
Yeah,
I've seen the word. Yeah.
Tip off.
And how can they be there working with the hot fuel just a few feet away?
Well, you had enough, it was back in the reactor far enough.
Yeah.
With the valve down, none of the fuel would come out. It would stay pretty right where it was, even though you took the cap off. And then once you'd put your tip off on and made all your setups, you'd start at the lower levels and you'd work your way up on your charge discharge, your sequence of setting it up, so you wasn't opening a bunch up here and then you'd be the water below you.
Right.
So you'd work from the lower level up. And then when you got all set up, you'd call the control room in the front face and tell them you was complete. After you got out, you'd say you're
done. And meanwhile, there'd be a dozen tip-offs on various
tubes, and all these
all ready to go.
And you'd get clear out of there and then you'd call them and tell them you're all set up and the door was shut. And the control room would verify it, and then they'd tell them they could go ahead and charge. And charging meant discharging, because you'd charge new fuel in, and the old fuel would go out.
Right.
And this is all made up in these tubes, mono tubes, and you'd have the spacers in the back, and then the fuel in the middle, and more spacers in the front. to and charge
every,
it.
Every tube might be different as far as spacers and whatnot?
Well, no, they'd be the, about the same because you had to have it, keep it in, the same amount.
Okay.
Later, first years ago, they take a tool in and pull out the spacers in the front after they charged it in the later years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how they did that.
In order to reuse them?
Yeah, they wouldn't get so crapped because they'd sit in there and get radiated or get some contaminated and radiated.
Yeah, yeah. If you were in the rear face when a hot slug came out, how long did you have to get the heck out of there?
No time at all. You had to get out, right?
Your scale would have been off.
Yeah, I've seen a case where we was on a run, things would go wrong, and you know, all of a sudden everything going off scale, and before you could clear a labyrinth. They had the old labyrinths where you
right.
get around a labyrinth, you had a cement shield there, and it was okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But
so
that was a rare.
But it was always a possibility.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Everybody had to be very careful.
And then the old areas, like B area, that's there, and F and D, they had catwalks right in the middle on the back wall of the reactor inside. And these, the 10 foot and the 20, and I said, I don't know if they went 30. 30's high enough where it wouldn't interfere. But when they, in those days, when the fuel come out a little bit too fast, and it land on these catwalks once in a while.
Oh, okay.
And then you had a time trying to push it off and get it down in the water.
So without getting anywhere close to it.
Without getting remotely, to not get, go up to the D machinery room, which is the discharge elevator.
Mm-hmm.
They always call it D machinery room, D elevator. And there's some plugs up there you could pull, knock poles down through and try and knock the stuff off. Or take water and try and flush it off in all different ways.
I'm trying to get a feel for the range you must have run into from barely detectable to everybody get out of here.
Yeah.
Quite a range.
Oh, yeah. It would be anything greater than 5R is one term we have to write once in a while. That's off scale.
Yeah. Did you have another instrument that you could bring back in?
Well, yeah.
Or a cap you'd put on? Or?
You could, there was, you moved up to another instrument like the high range CP, and there's a high range TPs. Well, I don't think there was a high range CP. It's a TP Zach next, called Totem Pole. And they'd read from 0 to 500R.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's right up there. So a 5R was 500R. CP would read to 5R.
Okay.
5,000, that'd read to 50,000. And that was as high as, the TP was the highest reading instrument we had.
If it was showing on that, you didn't want to stay.
No, it was
anyway.
Beyond where anybody would be anyway. And so you'd have stuff. The way you'd write a survey is if it was off scale, like with a CP, you'd say 5R at 2 foot or 5R at 20 feet, meaning something way out there, or the TP the same way.
You know. Did you ever have an extension arm?
Yeah, you had long poles, you could extend them.
Yeah.
Oh, God, 10, 15, 20 feet probably.
Sissy.
Yeah. And it could become a problem trying to hold them and get them around.
Hey, Lenny, will you bring me that box of crackers in?
Oh, yeah.
Cheez-Its? Huh?
Sure you don't want to cut? Oh, you don't want any coffee?
No, thanks. This is fine. Greg said that he couldn't remember. He knew that smoking was allowed in the reactors in some places.
Oh yeah, everybody smoked in those days. But you didn't smoke in a radiation zone. That was a not.
Okay.
If a guy was caught smoking in the radiation zone, it was automatic occurrence. He got written up. But you know what? The construction guys was more or less inclined to chew a lot. A lot of chewing tobacco, a lot of...
Oh, just to get around that.
Yeah.
Yep. Same today, actually.
Yeah, is it?
Yeah, I know a couple of guys who tried that because they enjoyed the process so much, but they weren't allowed to smoke in most places.
Yeah.
But,
There's plenty of these old elevators and stuff that you rode up and down on the chain, you know, you could see it on both sides. Well, they keep them pretty well blackened up with tobacco juice.
Yeah.
And now on the stairwells, these guys always tend to spit in quarters. You go up these stairwells, and the company had them paint, the painters paint a little white triangular corner, he's white, you know, on all the corners. I don't even know. Have you been around those old areas?
I've been in to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You maybe didn't notice it.
No.
But they did. They painted them corners, and that was because of trying to keep them from spitting in those corners because it would show real cool. So
how big of a paint?
Oh, just around about this much.
Oh.
Just down around the
yeah.
Around like this on the corner. White.
That's funny.
Boy, I've seen them wear a mask and chew and spit inside their own mask, some of those construction guys. God. At one time, the operators had to clean and sterilize those old masks we used to have, and they didn't do a lot of times. Did a lousy job. And then finally
because you would all just use whatever mask they gave you?
Yeah, it was sort of like hung up there. In the old days, they just hung on the pegs on the wall after they was washed up. And depending on the operators, you can imagine, you know, someone was pretty lousy.
Yeah, yeah.
But finally, they did set up where the plant laundry took over the job, and they had a full organization that just took care of the respiratory protection. And then it got pretty decent. Everything was bagged up. You get a mask.
Oh, right.
It was in a nice fresh bag, and you felt like, you know, you had something.
Yeah. What year did you retire? You are retired?
1987.
Okay.
I like to say they had to, when I left, they had to shut the end reactor down. They couldn't run without me.
Yeah.
Because it didn't. After I left, actually, an end reactor went down at the time Chernobyl happened.
Yeah, I remember. I've read about that. Yeah, it was.
We had an outage. It was going on right then. It was called loose parts outage. They have some valves flying apart out there. We had quite a long outage just to find the valves, pieces of valves floating around the system. And that's what it was, loose parts outage. And getting the stuff put together was pretty near to start up when that Chernobyl, then the word came down, hold off.
Yeah.
And then they had, oh God, then it started being, I was in rad engineering by then. Oh, I'd been in rad engineering there for quite a long while. Bill Westover and me was working together.
Okay.
I heard you mention Bill.
Yeah, Greg had mentioned him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were you there when the women started coming on the job?
Yeah, that was quite an experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the plant was not built for change rooms or restrooms or anything for women. And they had to modify and divide rooms in half, like a nice big restroom, and this from this hallway come in that was a women's part. They put a wall down halfway through it. That's what in there you did.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could go in on this hallway and come out over on that hallway at one time.
Well, I know when I was out there, the person who happened to be the health monitor was a woman. Did they have a lot of the other jobs too? Did they start getting into the other?
Yeah, they become first started becoming operators before they got into the health physics, and then we kind of become a necessity because you had women doing other stuff.
Oh, right.
And so you needed them.
Polite to it.
Yeah. You couldn't check them out very good or.
Yeah.
But I suppose the way things have changed now, I suppose there's an awful lot of more women out there.
Well, theoretically, it could be half. Yeah.
At one time, they had some big jobs like in area had for insulating the pipe spaces. They had took off the old pipe covering and put on some new or no, they was adding to stuff that didn't get covered originally. I guess that was it. That was a big job, all one big summer outage. And they hired, of course they didn't have enough pipe covers in the country to cover that job. So they started hiring women and kids and everything else and paying them the pipe covers wages and going by all their rules. Mm-hmm. People that just showed this one job and that's all they really knew how to do is just that one little piece of work.
Before I forget, what was the, when it was a 300 per week, what was the annual?
The annual was 3,000.
Oh.
Yeah, 3,000 or 3R.
The equivalent of 10 full weeks.
Yeah.
And
they had an intermediate break off. You couldn't have over 2,000 in a quarter in 3 months.
Okay.
So you couldn't go bang, bang, bang on the first 3 months and get here, you're right up there.
What do you think your average dose was during any typical week? It wasn't 300, otherwise you'd only be able to work.
Well, yeah, we went through a long time there. We'd be burned out before the year was out, routinely. We'd be 300 a week, just right as long as you could hang on there. And then they rotated us 200 during that one time.
So you, okay, right. But in a normal week,
maybe
10, 50, 100?
Yeah, you probably got about 150, probably, something like that. It's pretty hard not to get in there and pick up stuff
Since you're going to all the areas that had something in it.
My total lifetime, the penetrating radiation was 85 rem.
85 rem or 8500 milligrams. Huh. Well, really, if they're allowing 3,000 a year, that's not bad.
No.
How did you average 150 a week, though, or more without going over
depending
a
on
year?
For a long time, we had no supervisor. We was our own self-supervised for a long time because we was reporting to operations, which was like
they weren't
responsible for the most thing they might see in your paycheck, your card, time card or something. But so we just had to kind of watch it and say, well, I'm up to about 1,500 right now for the year. You better, so-and-so better take over, do this and that, take over the hot jobs, try and save yourself.
Okay.
Hey, you said you had one of the highest radiations on the project.
I did. I had 85 rem.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. That is high.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. For a lifetime.
How low did they get for a year? 300?
Oh, they're way down to there. What are they now? 500 a year or something? I think something like that.
I can probably look that up.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
That's millirem per year.
Yeah. And that used to be about the limit. That's about what the background. Oh, wait a minute. It wasn't wrong. It was
300 per week.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what the background radiation was in a place like Denver.
You mean just At altitude?
Yeah. Because they get a little bit of radiation just living there.
And flying airplanes, I guess.
Flying airplanes, you get a certain amount. Yeah. This all is going to come again because of Pakistan and India.
You know, it's like, it was funny that I'm working on this and thinking about all this, and all of a sudden, you know, we're thinking it's over, right?
Yeah.
Berlin Wall went down and we're all, you know.
Yeah.
But no, there's a lot of other countries that would like to be in the same position.
Yeah.
And it's probably a good example, watching India and Pakistan, of what happened in the 40s and 50s between us and the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
It's like, no way are we going to let them have it.
That's right.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, everybody's doing it.
Now, the trouble with the little countries, they don't care. They want to be... you got just different kind of people that they got different values, I guess. I can imagine those guys bowing to the East in some of those countries, Iran and some of those places.
Yeah, you don't feel real good about it. No.
Their life, they don't care about life very hardly.
Well, the other thing is that the more people that have access to giant bombs, the odds of a mistake or somebody being too much of a rush, all that increases.
Right.
Yeah. So no, it's not good.
The one thing I do hate to see is not having any power reactors running. It's a good source of clean power.
Yeah, it seems the pendulum kind of swung the other way.
Yeah, now they're relying back on strictly on dams and coal-fired and like that.
If gasoline was $3 a gallon, some people would, you know, be more enthusiastic probably.
Yeah.
But, you know, give it another 50 or 80 years and things might just naturally start including more of it.
We made some big-time mistakes out here, and I think Bonneville was one of them on these reactors. They started building them all at once out there. You know, they built room number 4 and instead of building one, get it going, and then as it wound down, you could take the same labor force, and start the next one. But they didn't do that, tried to build them all at once, staffed up. We had a big boom, and then we had a bust.
Yeah.
And lots of stuff sitting there incomplete because of that.
Which I guess...
And whoever determined they was going to need all these to start out with. Now, we're here these years later, we don't have them. We just had that one out there.
Yeah. And electricity is...
We still got the same amount.
Yeah.
We're doing everything and more. I remember having dim outs for electric for Christmas. They didn't want you to lighten up too many Christmas lights.
What year was this? During the energy crisis, or?
Back in that area. We must have caused it to be...
That's when they turned off the lights on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah, all right.
Like
right. They just went everywhere. Right. He was telling us, he says, you know, it's hard to get good job satisfaction out here. He says, when I worked for... His background was some kind of a manager for John Deere or International Harvester or something like that. He says, I could go home from work and look out on the railroad siding and see some new combines on a flat car ready to go, so many. Well, we had a pretty good day today or whatever, just from that. He said, but you don't get that out there. What you're making is invisible.
Yeah.
You say it's hard to see your side effect.
And where it does come out is 30 miles away in a little box.
Yeah.
Huh. It wasn't quite so secret when you got there, right, after the war?
Oh, yeah, it was. It got worse.
They got better at keeping things, what's the word? The people who were in charge of security got better at it.
Yeah. I always thought that there was tendency to, on security type people, to try and make their job bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, to, if I get 10 guys out, we always come up with some new things to inject into the security system
and
make it a little harder. Well, the only one that hurts is the people that have to live with it.
Right. But you were wandering around into every corner of the plant, right?
Oh, yeah, I am sure.
Was your security clearance different from other?
Well, we always had top clearance, yeah. In our group, you always had the it was the old original 100, 200, unlimited. That was the very top in the old days, 100, 200.
That
was all the 200, that was a Q clearance. But on a Q clearance, you could maybe only get to the 100 areas,
right,
or get to the 200s. But if you had a 100, 200 U, you could get everywhere, anywhere.
Oh, okay.
So, see, they had other places like where they was making the fuel buttons, or the, yeah, the plutonium buttons over the, what was that damn building over in the west area, where it took a special clearance, so most people worked over it couldn't even get in that.
Okay.
Final finishing building was highly classified. But in our, I never had to work there, but I always had to clear, so I guess if I had to, going in, I could have.
You were allowed to talk about your job, though, weren't you?
Out there, yeah.
No, I meant at home or with friends?
Oh.
They knew what you did for a living?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and there was no limit. It was, I guess there was a thing where if you wanted to go to Canada or Mexico, yeah, you'd have to supposedly get permission.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, you know, as you went along, a young guy, you go someplace, oh, you work down there, you know, in the bomb factory or something, and he wasn't the number one popular guy, you know, it seemed like. Like, everybody kind of didn't like you, or didn't like the kind of work you had. And, but it was always good paying, and always,
yeah.
I know myself, and a lot of guys never did ever draw an unemployment check in my whole life. Just always, a lot of guys lived on low unemployment and
right,
stuff off and on.
Well, you enjoyed the process too?
Huh?
You enjoyed the work itself?
Oh, yeah. You get, so you're wondering what's going on. In fact, right now, we meet the first and third Wednesdays for breakfast over in Richmond.
That's what Greg said, yeah.
Yeah, and then we help them out on ropes out on their emergency evacuation drills.
Yeah.
And they give us some money for a picnic every year.
Okay.
So it's kind of, they got so many years of experience, it helps keep their license that way.
Whose license?
Ropes. They got to be able to perform